Good afternoon, everyone. I'm Peter Gao from UC Berkeley, and it's my pleasure to present our work on network requirements for resource disaggregation. This is a joint work with my colleagues and my advisors from UC Berkeley, MIT, and Cornell. So in current data centers, server components such as CPU, memory, and disk, they are integrated inside servers. So we call them server-centric data centers. Within a server, these components are connected using specialized interconnects, such as PCIe bus. So over the past few years, hardware scaling has been slowed down, and it has becoming harder to keep up with Moore's law. So as a result, there are new industry trends that has emerged. So we refer them as rack-scale architecture, or disaggregated data architecture. So in this architecture, the resources that are contained within a server will now be disaggregated, and we build standalone resource blades as a node of the data center. So this design are not hypothetical designs. So academics and most of the major cloud vendors, they are designing and deploying these disaggregated prototypes. So there are many benefits of disaggregation. So the benefits are mainly understood in the computer architecture community. So in a disaggregated architecture, this architecture can simplify the hardware design by decoupling the resources. For example, disaggregation could be a solution to overcome the memory capacity wall. And CPU memory and network technology, they exhibit different trends in terms of power and capacity scaling. So recent study have shown that disaggregation could have 10x or even 100x resource density than a server-centric data center. So what is the challenge of disaggregation? In a disaggregated data center, those traffic that was contained within a server in a server-centric data center will traverse a network in a disaggregated data center. So current industry efforts are naturally assuming that we need specialized hardware to achieve good performance because of this high traffic that goes through the network. But we want to ask that, do we really need specialized hardware? So in this talk, we want to understand what is the minimal bandwidth and latency the network must provide. And we focus on legacy applications, because these legacy applications are designed and optimized for server-centric data centers. And therefore, when they are run in a disaggregated data center, they will experience worse performance degradation. So with the end-to-end requirements in mind, we separately inspect the aspect that may affect this requirement. So we consider the transport protocols, the OS stack, and the network fabric. And we want to see if the lower components can meet the requirements. As a preview of our results, the current commodity hardware solutions can meet the requirements. But existing OS and network stack have significantly high overhead than what is needed for resource disaggregation. However, there are recent research proposals that may be promising for meet these requirements. We make several assumptions throughout our work. So other than the last one, I will mention that later, they are all consistent with the prototypes we have seen. For CPU, we assume that we have limited cache coherence domain. That means the cache coherence traffic will be limited within each computer node, and there will be no cross-compute node cache coherence traffic. We also assume that there is a small amount of local cache on each of the compute node. So this will greatly reduce the compute to memory traffic between the nodes. For memory, we assume page-level remote memory access. That means when you access a remote memory, you do a swap operation. And for storage, we assume block-level distributed data placement. For the scale of disaggregation, we either assume rack scale disaggregation or data center scale disaggregation. So existing prototypes that I've mentioned in the first slide, they are all assuming that disaggregation happens at a rack scale. But we want to go broader and see if there's any chance that we can do disaggregation at data center scale, because there is more benefit for resource allocation. So we will show the result in the later part of the presentation and show the difference. We take a workload-driven approach, and we studied 10 workloads on 8 applications. As you can see, that's the workload. We believe that these workloads represent a wide spectrum of workloads in the current cloud environment. We run about 125 gigabytes of input data on these applications on 5 M3 2S large EC2 nodes, and we enabled virtual private cloud to guarantee performance isolation. These applications are run on a disaggregated data center emulator. The emulator uses a special swap device that handles the page faults. And this swap device is handled, is backed by the machine's own memory. So this will essentially partition the memory into two parts, a local part and a simulated remote part. So accessing the local part is free, but when you access the remote part, you need to go through the swap device. And then we inject some latency and bandwidth constraint to the swap operation using the swap device. And the delay we injected consists of two parts. The first part is the end-to-end network latency because you are accessing the remote part. And the second part is the size of the request divided by the bandwidth. So note that this is akin to a case that we have a dedicated link between the CPU node and the memory node. There's no network, there's a dedicated link between them. So we will address the network problem in a later part of the presentation because there will be congestion involved when you have a network. So let's look at the performance degradation of the applications. This is the result for one application, and you can see there are 9 bars here. And each bar represents a different latency and bandwidth combination. So the first, there are 3 groups here. The first group is we're injecting 1 microsecond latency. Second one, we inject 5 microseconds. And the last one, we inject 10 microseconds. And within each group, we inject different bandwidths. So we range the bandwidth from 10 gigabit per second to 100 gigabit per second. And as you can see, when we increase the increase the latency or we decrease the bandwidth, the performance degradation goes higher. So this is for one application, and we do the same experiment for the other applications. And on the upper side, on the upper graph, we show 4 applications. So these applications have relatively lower performance degradation. And there is the remaining set of applications that have relatively higher performance degradation. As you can see, the y-axis range is different. Okay, now we set a performance degradation target of 5%. And then we want to find that what is the minimal bandwidth and latency requirement we need to achieve this 5% target degradation. And we found that we need about 3 microsecond end-to-end latency and 40 gigabit per second bandwidth. Ignoring queuing delays, we still assume that there is a dedicated link. You can find that even if we inject same amount of latency and bandwidth combinations, the performance degradation varies between different applications. So why does this happen? So we plot the performance degradation of the applications with the memory bandwidth usage. And as we expected, we find that these applications, the performance degradation is correlated with the memory usage of these applications. So now let's look at the application layer. At the application layer, we need about 3 microsecond end-to-end latency and 40 gigabit per second on a dedicated link. But note that it's on a dedicated link. There's no network, no sharing of network resources. There will be no queuing delay. So what happens when we have a network? So we need to see if the current transport are good enough to handle this. So what we did is we did a transport simulation. We instrument a special swap instrumentation, and we extract the flow trace and feed that flow trace into a transport simulator. We simulate 5 protocols, but I'm not going to go over all of them. I'm only going to talk about 2 of them. So one of them is TCP, which is, I think everyone is familiar with that. And as you can see, TCP, the gray bar, has very high flow slowdown. And that means that it's not good enough. We need much better protocols. So as you can see, the PFabric one is performing much better. So we do need new protocols for disaggregation. We then feed the flow completion time results back to the special swap instrumentation. So now, instead of having a fixed delay, we inject the delay that was reported by the flow simulator. Now let's look at the results. At the beginning, we simulated 40 gigabit per second result and on a dedicated link. So that's a blue bar, and we use that as a baseline. And then we simulated 2 cases. The data center scale disaggregation, that means we can allow to put resources all over the data center. That means you need to, if you want to request any resources, you need to go through the core of the network, so higher delay. The second one is rack scale disaggregation. So we constrain the resources to stay within a rack. And as you can see, for data center scale disaggregation, the delay, the slowdown is very high. So is it because of the high end-to-end latency? Actually, it is not. We find that for rack scale disaggregation, it also has high degradation. And we inspect the flow traces, and we find that they experience high congestion. So the network congestion is causing the problem. But we're already using the best protocol we have. So that means we do need higher bandwidth. We then use 100 gig network and find that most of the results are good. But note that for these resources, some of them, for some application, you need to put them within a rack. For some of them, you can put them for the entire, over the entire data center. So the conclusion here is we need high bandwidth, and we may need a smart scheduler to allocate these resources because some of allocate the jobs. So because some of the applications, they need to stay within a rack. So at the transport layer, we need efficient transport and high bandwidth links. But what about the lower layers? We have established that we need 100 gigabit links and 3 microsecond end-to-end latency. We know that 100 gigabit links are common today, but 3 microsecond latency is maybe hard. So I'm going to do estimation on the best possible end-to-end latency achievable using current network hardware. Note that this is a back-of-envelope calculation and is quite optimistic, but we believe that this can serve as a good guideline for future designs. So for propagation delay within a rack, it is very small, no problem. And for transmission delay, we are assuming that we're transmitting 4 KB data over a 100 gigabit link. That's about 0.32 microseconds. For switching delay, we're assuming we're using a star and forward switch that takes about 0.8 microseconds. And there's the data copying time, that is the time when you copy the data from the OS buffer to the NIC buffer. That takes about 2 microseconds, according to a recent survey. And for the OS overhead, that's the time you handle the send request. That takes about 1.9 microseconds. So adding them together exceeds the 3 microsecond target. So what can we do? For propagation delay and the transmission delay, given the fixed network setting, we cannot do too much. But what about switching delay? We can use cut-through switches to reduce half of the switching cost. And for data copying time, we can use CPU NIC integration to, again, reduce about half of the overhead. For the OS overhead, we can use RDMA to remove a lot of them. And after applying these technologies, we find that we can meet the 3 microsecond target. So note that this calculation is based on the assumption that we are doing things within a rack. But can we do things across the data center? We leave that to future work. So let's make a summary. So at the application layer, we need 3 microsecond end-to-end latency and 40 gig links. But when it goes to transport layer, because of congestion, We need efficient transport, such as PFabric and P-host. And we need high bandwidth links, which is commonly available today. At the OS layer, we need kernel bypassing techniques, such as RDMA, which is also common today. For NIC, we need CPU NIC integration. That will be coming soon. And for switch, we need cut-through switching and high bandwidth links. And we believe that they are both common. So we have talked about how do we avoid performance degradation for legacy applications. But in the future, we are going to rewrite applications so that these applications can take advantage of disaggregation. So we did some initial simulation on how do we improve application performance. So it's in our paper, so please go and read the results. It's quite positive. We also need to think, rethink what the OS stack should be, how should the storage layer, the network stack be like, and how could we deal with failures. We also need to consider how could we design network fabrics. So this is a fundamentally new architecture, and that means that we need a lot of rethinking for many questions that have been answered for when we're building servers. We believe there are many possible possibilities for future work on this topic. And this concludes my talk. Thank you so much.
Hi. Sudarshan, Wisconsin Madison. So for your degradation study, you're using a memory as a swap device, right?
Yeah.
So I'm just wondering, are you removing the data or flushing the processor cache and the TLB entries and making sure that you're not accessing the data from the cache or memory? And do you also make sure the cache is flushed whenever you are swapping the pages?
So we are running these systems and modified. We just reduce the amount of local memory on each machine. And then remaining memory is used as a backup for the swap. So we are not changing any other things.
But the data would be still there in the processor cache, right? So if I take a page and copy it to some other memory, the content would be still there in the processor cache. So I'm just wondering the really small degradation, which you say it's like 10 to 12% for a random access workload like Graph Lab, I'm just wondering if you're making sure that the data is not there in the cache when you're accessing back from the remote memory.
You mean between different runs or when we?
Yeah, if you're accessing from a remote memory,
mm-hmm.
Do you make sure that the data is not there in the processor cache? You're actually accessing from the remote memory and not from the processor cache.
So all the simulation we've done is not going to remote. We are going to the local part of the memory.
Okay.
And yeah, so it's not really going to network. We're injecting the bandwidth and latency.
Hi, Mark Silverstein, Technion. I have a question. To what degree you think your simulation results are affected by the inherently low, well, relatively low performance of those frameworks that you tested? They are originally built for scaled out environments and written in Java, and it is well known that they may suffer from significant performance degradations by themselves.
Yeah, I think that's a good question. So if you look at the memory bandwidth usage, so the bandwidth usage for some of the applications is not very high, I think, but I think these workloads are common workloads in current cloud environment. And you actually can, if you run a very high stress test, I believe that the performance degradation will be very high. But I think for current cloud environment applications, the degradation won't be too high. Thanks.
How do large pages fit into this?
Yeah, so I think for large pages, if you can have larger page, then you always get the benefit of large page, no matter the pages in local and remote. So in our simulation, we didn't run any large page, mainly because the current OS doesn't support large page to swap out of the memory.